Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff Humfeld. On today's broadcast, host Craig LeBeau talks with Carl Burris, a former ward of the foster care system in Kansas, who is working with Kansas Appleseed to propose changes to the system and get those changes before the Kansas legislature. It is time for the KKFI pledge drive, and before we start our broadcast, we would like to bring you this appeal from Ricky Kidd.
Hi, this is Ricky Kidd, along with the practical and informative Jaws of Justice radio show. This show objective each week is to exemplify how our justice system impacts individual lives on a personal and family level. I've shared my own case of innocence on air, along with my deep and personal story of struggle regarding my wrongful conviction. I've also been able to share how I use poetry to process and express difficult and personal feelings, and how I continue to use that outlet to mentor to others incarcerated with me. Right now, KKFI 90.1, Jaws of Justice, and other important shows need your support, so that they can continue to bring you enlightening, educational, and inspirational topics. I ask you to show your support for the unique programs of KKFI and Jaws of Justice Radio by calling now at 888-931-0901. That is 888-931-0901. Or by going online to KKFI website at KKFI.org. That's KKFI.org. Thank you.
Okay, this is Craig LeBeau, and thank you for joining us here on Jaws of Justice. Today we're going to talk about foster care and problems that exist in the state of Kansas. And I have Carl Burris with us. He was a former foster care placement. He's going to talk about his experience in foster care and the reforms that he believes need to be made and what he is doing with Kansas Appleseed, working with them a little bit to further those goals. Welcome, Carl. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about your background, when you were in foster care, and what brought you to foster
care? Okay, so the first time I was in foster care, I was about 2 years old. I was brought in because my parents weren't getting along. There's a lot of domestic abuse, some drug use. And so I was brought in while my parents were going through divorce proceedings. My mom ended up getting me back after about 5 months. Again, that was when I was about 2 years old, and that was back in 1992 before the privatization of foster care. Then I was in foster care when I was about 13. That I was brought in because I was living just with my mother. The state had been looking into us for several years. I'd been in counseling for years. My mom and I were fighting a lot. And what ultimately brought me into foster care was a lack of getting to school on time. I was borderline truant, and so they ended up pulling me out after investigating my home life, which it took a lot longer for me to get pulled out from my mom's house than probably should have. My teachers had been questioning my home life since I was about 8 years old, so it was rough. The police were out at our house multiple times a week for a couple of years before I got pulled into foster care. And then I was in foster care for 2 years.
Was your father living in the home too?
No, at that time my father was not. My father and my mother separated when I was in foster care the first time.
During the process while you were in foster care, were you able to attend any of the court hearings that second time?
That second time around, I went to all of my court hearings. I was a child in need of care rather than a juvenile offender, and so it wasn't required as much for me to be at all of them, but I chose to be just to make sure that everything was going how I wanted it to. I didn't feel that the lawyer on my case, my guardian ad litem, was quite speaking out for what I wanted. And so there were multiple times where I actually had to ask the judge to allow me to speak for myself. What ultimately allowed me to go from a reintegration to adoption was me asking for everyone to leave the... I was in a citizens review board, which is not a formal hearing. It's a less formal hearing. And I requested for everyone to be removed from the room except for the board themselves, my court-appointed special advocate. And I allowed my guardian ad litem to stay as well. And I was just frank with the citizens review board to tell them that there was no situation where me going home was going to result in me having a good life, and so asked them to move towards adoption.
What county was this in?
This was in Douglas County, so Lawrence, Kansas.
So this was back in 2005 then, 2006. Right?
No, this was back in 2003. I know that it's a thing that has been in Kansas for 25 years. But it's not in every county.
And do you feel like that having that board is something that helps the process?
Definitely, it's something that helps the process. So when kids are in foster care, they generally have 1 to 2 court hearings a year, which a lot of things can change in a kid's life in that time period. A lot of things can change in family dynamics in that period. So what the Citizens Review Board does is allow them to have more time to address the court without having to have formal hearings and have to be called up on the docket. I believe there were a lot of services offered to my parents. I have since read over some of my files from back then. I myself tried to get on the Citizens Review Board when I was about 21, but I wasn't in a place, an emotional place myself to be able to handle that.
Mm-hmm. But between the first foster care and the second, she didn't continue to avail herself of the services? Or
she would stick with psychologists enough to be able to get medications, but she never had a formal diagnosis. She wouldn't stick with the treatment process or the diagnosis process long enough to actually get a diagnosis. She would go to therapy and she would get medicine, but she wouldn't stick with anything long enough to get a proper diagnosis. And so she was getting medications from a lot of people. She herself never really saw herself as a drug abuser, but she was going to multiple psychologists to get multiple prescription drugs.
Let me focus now on the second time you were in foster care. How many foster homes were you in during that 2 years until you were adopted?
I was in a total of 4 foster homes, 3 of which were long-term placements. I had a total of 5 moves, one of which was a short-term placement that, after a long-term placement failed, became a long-term placement itself. It was the only foster home that actually worked well for me. I still speak with that foster parent. She's become my mother. I was in a total of 4 foster homes, one of which took high need placements. That was the first foster home. They lived on 96 acres. They were out near Clinton, Kansas. So just on the other side of Clinton Lake from Lawrence. That foster home was rough. They were getting a lot of money for kids to be there because they took in juvenile offenders, they took in high medical need, which was one of the reasons I was placed there. I was a type 1 diabetic. Well, I am a type 1 diabetic. And was struggling from major depression, which led to some eating disorders, which that foster home tried to claim were some suicidal tendencies because I was eating myself to death. After that, I got sent to a short-term placement, which was the one that turned into the long-term placement. But between those two, I had a long-term placement, which was one of the foster homes that was just doing it out of religious reasons, which the state knew that that placement wasn't going to work for me, but the paperwork was already filled out. Mm-hmm. I'm a very outspoken liberal individual, and a conservative Christian foster home was not going to work well. They knew that, but they still placed me there, even though the short-term placement was willing to keep me there. Mm-hmm. That was actually one of the major problems that I had, was she was willing to keep me. She had the bed space, but they told her that I had to move anyways. And so I ended up having to go to a conservative Christian foster home that was very traumatic. They forced me to attend their church, which went rather cultish. I was only supposed to listen to the teachings of their preacher and not anything else, and had a lot of traumatic encounters because of that foster home. The other short-term foster home that I had was while I was at that first long-term foster home, while they went off to San Diego, because her son was graduating boot camp from the Marines, they ended up staying for almost a month. And so I had to go to a different foster home during that time, which was out in rural Kansas, in Quinimo, that had a population of 300 people and was yet another very bad placement, because it was exactly what you would expect from Deep Woods. It was a log cabin that I was staying in.
So
a long-term placement is supposed to be anything that is going to be more than about a week. So a long-term placement is anything more than a week. A short-term is respite. And so I had a couple of respite placements, which are only supposed to be for, you know, like a weekend when the foster parents need a break, mm-hmm. and things like that. And I do understand the need for respite, but, you know, parents don't just get to have respite whenever they need. So, you know, if you're going to take in kids, you take on the responsibilities of the kids.
None of the foster parents you had were the ones that adopted you, is that correct?
That is correct.
How did they go about finding you an adoptive placement?
I was rather lucky. The adoptive placement that I had was a family friend who, as soon as I went into foster care, he started the classes to become a licensed foster parent. And so around the time that my case plan was changed from reintegration to adoption, that was around the time that my move happened from my last foster home to him. And so I was with him for a few months, roughly about 3.5 months before I was legally adopted.
In terms of advocating for reforms, what do you see as being needed at the initial outset as far as finding placements and where they place foster children?
Foster care reform in terms of finding foster placements and foster homes, they need to look into the intentions of why someone's becoming a foster home. You know, they talk about eliminating a lot of foster homes because of immoral grounds. They keep bringing up the whole argument of whether or not lesbians and gays can be foster parents, and I think that should just be thrown out. We need to stop that argument. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the best parents I know are gay and lesbian. We need to find people who aren't doing this for financial reasons, that aren't doing this out of, I don't want to say that we shouldn't take in foster homes that are doing this for religious reasons. I don't want to eliminate any group of people. However, there are a lot of foster placements in the state of Kansas that are doing it out of a religious calling. To be frank, a lot of kids don't want that. And it can lead to traumatic situations, because not everyone is conservative. One of our big problems in Kansas is that a lot of the recruitment that we're doing is through religious organizations. And I think we need to do it out of a more civic nature, but I don't know how to screen for that.
Did they have matching procedure in...
They're supposed to, but we have such a lack of foster parents in general, I think in the entirety of the country, that we don't have the resources to really discriminate right now. I did work at KVC for a short time, and I know that they are constantly scrounging to find placements when kids come in, because we're scraping the bottom of the barrel right now. We don't have a lot of resources.
And so what did you do when you were working at KVC?
I was a quality assurance worker, and so I was making sure the case files were together, requesting documentation, sitting in as third party during case plans, making sure that the kids' files are up to date, requesting birth certificates, school records, okay, those kind of things. But I know that there are massive email blasts when kids come in trying to figure out what's going to work, and we just don't have the resources right now.
And but you're not with them right now?
I am not currently.
Okay. And was KVC the private contractor that was involved in your case?
They are. I know that they were when I was in foster care the second time. I don't honestly know who was in charge of it the first time I was in. Again, I was 2 years old. But the second time, it was definitely KVC, because they've had the Northeastern Kansas contract for years.
All right. Yeah. And the first time, 92, that was before they had privatization.
Yeah.
I think that went in started in 98, 99.
I know it was voted on in 95, 96. Okay. I don't know exactly when it was full implemented.
Yeah. So when you say they didn't have resources, did part of that affect the services, counseling services they were able to provide?
I honestly had incredible counseling services while I was in foster care, and then after I was adopted. I was taken off of the non-insured psychiatric services that are in Lawrence, and I was put onto a private psychologist who was seeing foster kids as pro bono type work. And he is one of the better, if not one of the best, psychology teams in Lawrence. And so I was super lucky. I know other kids have had issues being able to get services, though. One of the reforms that we need more of a foster parent pool. We need people to sign up to be foster parents. We need people to go through classes. We need people to understand how much of a crisis we're in currently in terms of lack of placements. Unfortunately, we also have lack of resources to do recruitment. And so as a social service, there's not a whole lot of resources financially, recruitment-wise, placement-wise, worker-wise. We need people involved at every level.
Do you have any ideas on what they can do to attract more foster parents?
Actually fund it? Well, foster parents, I'm not entirely sure what to do to recruit foster parents. We need to get away from the stigma of what's going on, and we just need to get people understanding that we need to help one another. We need to get away from the stigma that needing help, requesting help, and taking advantage of help is a bad thing. And I don't know how we'll ever get around that stigma. People...
The one home you mentioned that you were placed in where you thought that it was special needs and you thought they were doing it just for the money, how many foster children did they have at one time?
They... while I was there, they had three foster kids. The most I ever saw in that foster home was upwards of six. They had enough beds to they were licensed to have enough beds to have upwards of seven, if not eight, mm-hmm. if need be, which is insane when you're talking about them taking on kids who have a criminal rap sheet of armed Grand Theft Auto. One of my foster siblings was there on his third strike of armed Grand Theft Auto. He was schizophrenic. I was there because I was I'm a type 1 diabetic. I have post-traumatic stress disorder and major depression. I had a foster sibling that was raped by multiple uncles and was there because of depression resulting from the sexual trauma. They had a number of juvenile offenders come through. She was taking on kids who, you know, in former climates would have been locked up for months because they were JO. There were months where she was getting close to $10,000 a month in kid revenue.
So what are some of the other reforms that you think should be made?
Some major things that we need. We need funding, just like any other social service that we need. We need funding. We need education. We need social workers to not get burned out because they're not getting resources from their employers. I've seen social workers who are pulling 70 or 80 hours a week. You know, when you're talking about stress that equates to working in a battlefield in terms of trauma to oneself, that's insane to ask someone who is doing a job out of the goodness of their heart to work 70 or 80 hours a week. Most social workers that are working in foster care aren't pulling in much more than 30-some thousand dollars a year. You know, it's the same problems that we have in education. The people who are doing these jobs to help bring up our next generation are getting very little support from their supervision or supervisory teams. They're getting very little financial support. They're getting very little government support. And so we need to better support our people that are working in these fields. We need better oversight from the government itself. It's hard to pinpoint any one thing without talking about the massive social reform that we need in any social service that we have in this country.
So another area that I want to address is, I don't know if there were any problems in any of the foster homes, but other than the type of placement that you said wasn't what you needed, were there any problems with any of the foster parents that needed to be addressed that were not addressed?
That's such a loaded question. Other than the one foster placement that I still talk to, I had a lot of problems with each of the foster homes. The religious foster home, I had a lot of issues with. I was a teenage kid, mm-hmm. and they were very manipulative. They had, I'm trying to remember how many kids they themselves had. One of the things that led to me getting removed from that foster home was they stole my journal that I used for therapy, and cited that as some very, very psychological things that I was doing against them, which this was a journal that I was using to express myself, to get out feelings so that I didn't act on things. And again, I was a teenager in foster care, and they were trying to limit how I was thinking. But I'm trying to figure out ways of talking about this without... Yeah.
Let me ask you this, that when you were in some of the homes in the little towns and the rural areas, course, I mean, in the rural areas, naturally, you expect you get find more conservative people, typically.
Yes.
But as far as training and what they were allowed to do, do you think, did they seem to have less training and get by with doing more than what would have been allowed if they were being foster homes in Douglas County or Wyandotte County?
That foster home itself had a lot of issues. It was quite disturbing, some of the things that they were getting away with. I personally have more of a knowledge of how the foster system works because I've worked in CASA, I've worked in KVC, mm-hmm. I've worked in the system itself. And some of the things that they were allowed to get away with, I don't know how they had their license. It was a log cabin that the foster father had built, which, you know, don't get me wrong, that takes some real ingenuity. It was under construction while I was there. This was a rural home, so a good 40% of their food they got themselves. They were avid hunters, and so the food that we were eating, you never knew exactly what it was going to be. I think the first night I was there, they served up a turkey that the son had got that evening. I think there might have been some raccoon in there as well. You know, their gun cabinet, which mm-hmm. you have to have your guns locked up when dealing with foster kids. Their gun cabinet was a framed out room that didn't have any sheetrock up yet, that was separated from the rest of the area by chicken wire and a screen door with a standard like $5 deadbolt, or not deadbolt, but locking doorknob on it. And then they left their compound bows with full quivers laying around, which mm-hmm. always puzzled me. So, you know, the hunting element alone had me questioning things. It seemed like they didn't have a lot of support from Kaw Valley. They didn't want to... I was enrolled in school. This was during the school year. And they got really grumpy that they had to get me into Lawrence to get me to school, which was an hour and a half away. They weren't getting a whole lot of reliable transport mm-hmm. from the agency itself. They had hunting dogs that were borderline feral.
One of the things that came out this past fall in one of the investigations they did was that there were times that some of the foster children, when they were picked up, actually had to sleep overnight first night in their social worker's offices until they could find a placement.
That so, talks back to the point that we need more foster homes in the state. With that investigation, I'm not sure which office they were specifically talking about. I worked out of the Topeka office, and mm-hmm. you know, we have beds available in the office. So if kids are staying overnight, which they did have to do for a while, there were beds available. There was a full staff there overnight. You know, there were minimum of 3 workers there while there were kids in office. You know, it's not like they're just there. There are resources available to them. A lot of kids, I don't want to say that the kids didn't mind it, but, you know, there were TVs and game consoles available. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just, oh, they're sleeping on the floor. That was how some of that article was made out to be. Like, it is terrible to have kids having to sleep in the office, and it's not something that any of us really want mm-hmm. to ever see, but it wasn't just kids sleeping on the floor.
And so from the background from what you said with working at KVC too, have you gotten into social work as your career? Or?
I want to go into social work. I'm leaning more towards clinical social work than just being a, a worker.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have the education yet. One of the things that I struggle with is when I was in foster care, they were passing laws to help kids go to college. That didn't go into full effect until around my 24th birthday. You have to use it by your 24th birthday. You have to be in foster care after you are six, or on your 16th birthday or after. I was adopted at 15 and a half. I'm in a gray area. So that was one of my struggles, is trying to get through school. I'm working on going back towards school, but...
Were you able to get any college through, or...?
I've attempted to go to junior college, but because of some other circumstances, mm-hmm, with family health, I have not been able to complete any college yet.
Okay. So we talked about some of the issues and things to improve foster care. Are there any significant things that you feel like need to be done in terms of training and services by the social workers?
Training in general needs to be amped up. It, while I was at KVC, their training program was awful for the position that I was in. Mm-hmm. When I was interviewed for the position, they said that they were trying to change their training program, and it seemed like it was more chaotic than ever. In terms of training for foster homes, they need to get the word out better about what training is available. There seems like there's a lot of cases where if people don't ask for it, they don't know what's available. They're not informed of what's available. There were a lot of benefits that I could have gotten that I wasn't informed of when I was coming out of foster care. I don't remember what kind of aftercare I had anymore. They're supposed to give up to a year of aftercare services to foster homes or to placements when kids are adopted, or if they go back into their parents' home. I feel like kids get more aftercare if they're reintegrated than if they're adopted. Now, I'm a very inquisitive person. I feel like I didn't ask the right questions until it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do a better job of informing people of what services are available. And I know that my personal experience with a lot of workers that are working currently, the workers themselves are trying to do a better job of that, but the agencies aren't. I just thought of something that was another reform that really needs to happen, but it fluttered out of my head. But there are a lot of reforms out there that are needed, and a lot of it comes from just in general needing support.
Mm-hmm. And most of the reforms that you think are needed then would be things that get required that the state be willing to spend more money?
I don't want to bring this all down to just a financial burden, because it's not. It's not just a financial burden. We need resources in terms of finances, but we need resources in terms of manpower and support and training. I feel that it comes down to a systemic issue of our society doesn't want to support welfare in general. And that's something that needs to change. Another big problem that I see personally that I've had a lot of issues with is we're very family-centered in terms of our care, in terms of preserving families, and in terms of family rights and what is best for the family rather than what is best for the child themselves. That was something that I struggled with a lot, is and why I don't want to become just a social worker working in that area of social welfare, is I don't feel like I can be centered on preserving the family if I know personally that it looks like the family isn't going to try to help the kid. If I see things that are going to be negative indicators of something that will be negative in a kid's life. I can't work towards that. And that's something that I've struggled with a lot, because I feel that we should be centered on what are the best things for each individual child. That's a hard area to tackle if you're going to focus on what is the best needs of the child. You're not going to preserve every family.
Do you feel like the federal standard, though, has helped? I think the federal standard that they apply in order for the state to get funding is it has to move toward termination if there's no progress toward reintegration within, I think they have an 18-month guideline.
I don't know enough of those standards to really say on that myself. And again, that's a hard situation. That's a hard thing for me to talk about as well, because I don't want to say that the parents shouldn't have the opportunities. There are a lot of parents that you can see in a matter of months that aren't going to do a lot. You can see a lot of parents on the flip side that are trying but can't, or, you know, if kids are in care because their parents are in prison, I don't want to say that those individuals are wrong parents either. We need to, there needs to be a balance. I can see that. But I do think that those are things that we need to reevaluate.
For those of you who just joined us, we've been talking to Carl Burris, who was formerly in foster care. He's now 28, and we talked about problems in the foster care system in Kansas and some reforms that he has suggested. And I'm all right. Thank you, Carl.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.